sound there of sirens and strikes in Tel Aviv, Israel, in the early hours of this morning after the United States bombed three major nuclear sites in Iran. Donald Trump finally answering that question on whether he would send American bunker-busting bombs to support Israel's conflict with Iran. He said the US strikes totally obliterated Iran's nuclear enrichment facilities, and he told Tehran to make peace or face far greater attacks in future.
A short time ago, the U.S. military carried out massive precision strikes on the three key nuclear facilities in the Iranian regime, Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan. Our objective was the destruction of Iran's nuclear enrichment capacity and a stop to the nuclear threat posed by the world's number one state sponsor of terror. Tonight, I can report to the world that the strikes were a spectacular military success. Iran's key nuclear enrichment facilities have been completely and totally obliterated.
In response, Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi warned of dangerous consequences to these outrageous strikes.
It is an outrageous, grave, and unprecedented violation of the fundamental principles of the Charter of the United Nations and international law. The warmongering and lawless administration in Washington is solely and fully responsible for the dangerous consequences and far-reaching implications of its act of aggression.
These strikes mark a significant escalation in the ongoing war between Iran and Israel. So what now for the US and its 40,000 personnel in the Gulf region? Will Iran strike back against the United States, putting US citizens at risk? Where does Israel go from here with this conflict that it began 10 days ago? Earlier today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the strikes by the United States would help lead the Middle East to a future of prosperity and peace.
Congratulations, President Trump. Your bold decision to target Iran's nuclear facilities with the awesome and righteous might of the United States will change history. History will record that President Trump acted to deny the world's most dangerous regime the world's most dangerous weapons. His leadership today has created a pivot of history that can help lead the Middle East and beyond to a future of prosperity and peace.
And how far is Donald Trump, the America First president who set his face against US involvement in foreign wars, how far is he prepared to go in support of Benjamin Netanyahu, now fighting on several fronts, Iran, Gaza, and against Iran proxies in Yemen and Lebanon? At home, Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs Simon Harris says there's an urgent need for de-escalation, dialogue and diplomacy. He said he's very conscious of the large presence of Irish peacekeeping troops in South Lebanon and their safety is of paramount importance. Foreign Affairs is also supporting Irish citizens who wish to leave the region. Now, throughout the programme, we'll be discussing what's happened overnight and what happens now. The Pentagon has just begun a briefing in Washington, D.C. We'll keep an ear to that. We'll discuss the implications of the President Trump intervention with Taoiseach Simon Harris, with Professor Edward Burke of UCD, and we'll have the latest reaction from Israel. But first, let's go to our Washington correspondent, Sean Whelan. And Sean, he didn't wait. Donald Trump didn't wait 2 weeks. He only waited 2 days to send in these bunker-busting bombs to Iran's nuclear facility. So look, what do we know about that decision and about the timing of that decision?
Well, he said he would give them up to 2 weeks. And in the event, as it turned out, like you say, he gave them 2 days before sending in the bombers. Now, the exact mechanics of his decision making, we have yet to find out. The statement that came last night was simply one of, yes, we've done this, and yes, we want the Iranians to get back to the table now. But as far as the Americans are concerned, they've destroyed these three nuclear facilities. Now, there's no independent verification of whether they've destroyed these three nuclear facilities. The Iranians themselves have said that there was no leak of radiological material, that the sites suffered damage, but it wasn't devastating for the nuclear industry in Iran, because they say they had moved their most valuable nuclear materials out of those sites as soon as the hostilities with Israel had begun last week.
So we have yet to find out
exactly the extent of the damage that has been done by this bombing raid.
So is this then an end to American activity in Iran? What is Donald Trump saying about that? He was asked to send in these bunker-busting bombs. He says they've worked. They'd never been tested in real time before. So is that job done now, end of American involvement?
Well, he hopes that that is the case. And we're getting some more details now. As you say, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, an Air Force general, has just started his briefing. We understand that six B-2 bombers took part in the raid on the Fordo facility, dropping 12 of these massive penetrator ordnance bombs, 13 tons each, onto the site there. So I'm sure it's done a lot of damage, but whether it has destroyed the facility, we don't know. And how the Iranians respond, that is the all-important question. President Trump, again, when he addressed the nation during the night, said, we hope that the Iranians now come back and talk and reach agreement with us. Otherwise, the raids will continue against the effectively the military-industrial complex of Iran. He said it will be easier to do because their air defences, as we know, have been taken apart by the Israelis, and that last night's action represented the most difficult, the most dangerous of the options that are available to them. However, we do know also from previous conflicts, such as the NATO bombing against Yugoslavia, eventually you run out of targets. And if the regime that you're bombing doesn't want to come to the table, then what? So both sides, the Americans and the Iranians, are confronted with a very difficult question. And that is, where do we go next? How do we stop this? Or do we even want to stop this now?
And that indeed is the big question for now. Sean Whelan, thank you very much. We're going next to Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Harris. And Taoiseach, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Mary.
Do you support President Donald Trump's action in bombing Iran's nuclear sites?
I think it's resulted in an extraordinarily dangerous escalation of a conflict that could already best be described as a tinderbox. And I need to be, I suppose, very clear and very blunt. We're now entering a moment of particular danger, because I think the chances now of a spiral of escalation are more likely than ever before. And there is a real prospect now of the international community losing all control of this very, very volatile conflict. Yeah. There are very clear laws as well, Mary, as you know, in international legal norms around not striking nuclear installations. And that's for very good reasons. Thank God we woke this morning to the International Atomic Energy Agency saying they haven't detected any increase in radiation. But imagine if we were waking up this morning to a situation where radiation levels were extraordinarily high and the health and human danger that that would have presented far beyond Iran as well. So this is an extraordinarily dangerous time.
It certainly is. But Donald Trump had no congressional approval to go to war, and the American Constitution states you're supposed to have that. And, you know, you talk about international legal norms. Hasn't the rule of law and international legal laws been blown out the window, not just here, but in Gaza, in Ukraine? Nobody's paying attention to international legal norms anymore.
I think that's sadly true. I mean, I'm proud that in Ireland we continue to stand up for international law and human rights. We continue to call out what's happening in Gaza as a genocide. We continue to seek EU sanctions in relation to that. But you are right. In general, international law and a rules-based system is under threat. We've seen it in relation to Putin's illegal invasion of Ukraine. We've seen it in relation to the genocidal activity of Israel in Palestine. And now we see it in relation to the Iran-Israel conflict. And remember, all of this is happening against a backdrop where actually talks were possible. So let me be absolutely clear. I mean, Iran is a dangerous influence in the Middle East. There's no doubt. Iran should never be allowed to possess nuclear weapons. Europe is very united in relation to that. But there was a process in place to try and take this forward.
And they were engaging in dialogue.
There was, and we were represented through the European Union at talks in Geneva this week. I'm heading to Brussels in the next number of hours now, where we'll be updated on those talks. But my readout and understanding is that there was a commitment from the Iranian side to further talks. So the only way this will be resolved, and the only way really people can step back from the brink now, is through de-escalation, diplomacy and dialogue. There isn't another alternative.
Taoiseach, I want to ask you about Irish citizens in the Middle East. Irish citizens in Iran now, what can you tell us? And are they safe? Have they a way of getting out if that is what they want to do?
So the first thing I want to do is pay huge tribute to our diplomats in Iran and in Israel. I took the decision in the last few days to withdraw our diplomats from Tehran, but I really want to thank our Ambassador Leisha Moore and her team there. And similarly in Israel, our team led by Ambassador Sonia McGuinness, people doing extraordinarily work in a dangerous area. And I thank them for the work they do for Ireland. In both Iran and in Israel, there's a relatively small number of Irish citizens. Many are of dual nationality, and some are seeking evacuation. I want to be careful what I say here because this is an ongoing situation, but I expect to have a significant update in the coming hours. We're working very closely with European counterparts through what's called the Civil Protection Mechanism, where basically European countries work together to try and safely get citizens out. Obviously, the airspace is closed. Therefore, the only way out is over the land border. That is not without challenge, to put it mildly. But there's a lot of good work going on. We're in touch with all of our citizens. There's only a very small number seeking evacuation at this stage. And like I say, I expect to have a significant update on that in the hours ahead.
And Tánaiste, I want to ask you about the risks for Irish troops on peacekeeping duty in South Lebanon as well. And you mentioned them in your statement earlier. Are they now sitting ducks?
No, not at all. I mean, the first thing to say is our troops are extraordinarily well trained. They're brave and brilliant men and women of Óglaigh na hÉireann. I had the honour of visiting them on the ground in southern Lebanon in recent weeks, and I want to take this opportunity to thank them and their families. Never has peacekeeping been more important. But of course, as their minister, as Minister for Defence, their safety is of paramount importance to me. So I'm being updated on a very regular basis by our Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces. Decisions are being taken constantly to make sure their security and their safety is to the fore in all that we do. But it does highlight yet again, you know, Ireland may seem very far away from Israel and Iran, but this is a conflict with global consequences and a conflict that has significant potential to spill over even further if we don't see progress in relation to de-escalation.
If necessary, will you pull them out?
There are no plans in relation to that, and all of these decisions are taken through the UN structures. But let me say this more broadly, their safety is always paramount in government's mind. But at the moment, there's no military advice in relation to that.
All right. For now, Tánaiste, Simon Harris, thank you for your time with us on This Week Today. Now, as I said earlier, the Pentagon has just begun a news briefing. Let's hear, we're going to go to Israel shortly and Channel 4's Sikander Kamani. But before we do that, let's hear US Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth. He's just told that Pentagon briefing that strikes on Iran were an overwhelming success.
Last night, on President Trump's orders, U.S. Central Command conducted a precision strike in the middle of the night against three nuclear facilities in Iran, Fordow, Natanz, and Esfahan, in order to destroy or severely degrade Iran's nuclear program. And as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs will demonstrate, it was an incredible and overwhelming success.
And here's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Air Force General Dan Kane. He just told that briefing that the Iran strikes had been a high-risk mission.
Last night, on the president's orders, U.S. Central Command, under the command of General Eric Kurilla, executed Operation Midnight Hammer, a deliberate and precise strike against three Iranian nuclear facilities. This was a complex and high-risk mission carried out with exceptional skill and discipline by our joint force.
Complex and high risk. We're going to go to Israel, to Tel Aviv. Sikander Kamani is Channel 4 News foreign correspondent. He's there. Sikander, good afternoon and thank you for joining us. Look, the United States did what Benjamin Netanyahu had asked and wanted them to do. They brought in these bunker-busting bombs to Fordow and two other nuclear sites. What is the atmosphere like and the reaction like there in Tel Aviv now?
Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu released a statement thanking President Trump. It's clear, as you said, that this was what he wanted to happen all along. Israeli officials had been calling on the United States, pressing them to carry out a strike of this kind because they know that only American B-2 planes have the capacity to carry these huge 30,000-pound bunker-busting bombs. And Israel alone could not do that, although Israel has, over the past week, damaged other nuclear sites and much of Iran's ballistic missile capability. This morning, around 7:30, local time, we had a barrage of Iranian ballistic missiles fired towards Israel. One of them struck a residential area of Tel Aviv with dozens of people injured. But I think there's a very real prospect of much more intense Iranian retaliation to come, directed towards Israel, perhaps towards American bases in the region later today and overnight. That's certainly something that's on everyone's minds here. And it's something that President Trump would have been weighing up too, because the Iranians have previously said any strike on Iran by the US will be met with a retaliation. Having said that, Iran's military capabilities have been seriously degraded by Israel. Israel claims to have taken out around half of all of Iran's missile launches in its war. And so it's not clear exactly how much damage and the threat Iran will be able to pose.
Yeah, there are still several moving parts to this. But in terms of Benjamin Netanyahu, he said as his reason for going into Iran 10 days ago, it was to take out the nuclear threat. So according to him, and according to Donald Trump, that job has now been done. The nuclear sites have been obliterated, Donald Trump has said. So will Benjamin Netanyahu call off his jets?
That's a good question. I mean, so far we've had a briefing by the Israeli military which suggests that they still have further targets, in those words, in their words. Now, it's not clear if that's part of Israeli and American attempts to exert leverage over Iran in order for them to reduce their or scale back their attacks and do something that is more symbolic rather than something that leads towards further escalation and would invite further kind of counterstrikes by the US and by the Israelis towards Iran, or if Israel is looking to achieve further destabilization of the Iranian regime. And we've heard a number of analysts say that they believe that Iran's real aim now, that Israel's real aim now in Iran is to achieve regime change. The Israeli Prime Minister and others say that it's not an official part of their war aims, although it's something that they would welcome. It'd also be something, I think, that would be very difficult to achieve from the outside with no kind of ground forces going in. There seems no prospect of that and no opposition force ready to take over from the current regime, though.
You're in Tel Aviv, but I know you keep an eye and an ear across the Gulf states and across the Arab countries. What is reaction like to what has taken place overnight?
Well, they've been expressing concern in public statements. I think in private, many of the Gulf states will frankly broadly welcome the strikes on Iran's nuclear program. They are close allies of the United States. They have been regional rivals of Iran. There has long been an antagonistic relationship between, for example, the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Iranians. So I don't think there'll be many Arab states who are really shedding tears over this. But of course, you know, one concern that people have is about the possibility of a radiation leak, also about what kind of response the Iranians might come back with, if it could be closing the strategic Straits of Hormuz, through which around 20-30% of the world's oil supply goes through, or if it could involve attacks on American bases within some of those Arab states. So that will be an issue of concern. And these Arab countries had achieved something of a rapprochement with Iran in recent years. But still, I think fundamentally, most of them see Iran as more of an enemy than as an ally. And so that will be guiding their response right now too.
Sikander, appreciate your time this lunchtime. Let's come back to studio now. And I'm joined here by Professor Edward Burke, Assistant Professor in the History of War at University College Dublin. Edward, thank you very much for coming in. You're welcome to the programme. What's your reaction to what's been happening overnight? I mean, there's so much has been happening, so many news conferences from Iran, from the United States, from Israel. Is the world a much more unstable place this lunchtime as we talk than it was even 24 hours ago?
Absolutely. This is the most concerning, devastating event potentially in terms of political instability, not only in the Middle East, but more globally in terms of, we look at how, you know, Iran, Russia and China are reacting to these events. since the 2003 invasion of Iraq. So this is an enormous moment of great concern. I would very much agree with what the Taoiseach says. It's very telling that the United States didn't even go to the UN Security Council to even sort of provide a briefing or try and win support. They obviously wouldn't get support from some others, including Russia, etc., but they could have tried at least to build a coalition of understanding, of concern for the recent enrichment of uranium in Iran. They didn't try and do that. So this unilateralism, that you have this coalition now, the US and Israel, in an already extremely unstable situation, not least because of Gaza, because of Lebanon, because of Syria. And we have a major war going on in Ukraine, and we have an Iranian-Russian de facto alliance on that, whereby Iran is supporting Russia. And similarly, China has very close ties now with Tehran. So we're looking at different fronts of conflict in the world that are adding up to an increasingly internationalized conflict with the United States on one side, and Russia and China, and essentially sort of waging this warfare through Ukraine, through Iran, through Syria, etc. And so we're in extraordinarily dangerous times where international law, sadly, is simply not being adhered to by many
indeed,
sides.
Indeed, as we were talking about with the Taoiseach there as well. Yeah. Let's talk about Iran for a minute. Perhaps, it doesn't perhaps want to escalate, but at the same time, it can't be seen to be weak. So how do they walk that line to show strength but not to escalate into a situation where it's out of control and we're into regime collapse and the consequences of that in Iran?
I think we shouldn't underestimate opposition in Iran, but neither should we overestimate it. Regime change, I think, if you even listen to the Iranian diaspora, some of whom are very critical of the Iranian government today, they are very angry about these strikes, about this unilateral attack. So I think it is highly optimistic that there will be some swift and positive regime change in Iran in the coming days and weeks. I think that's simply not going to happen. I think similarly, however, the Straits of Hormuz would be very surprised if Iran moved to sort of shut the Straits of Hormuz simply because their customer is China. Mm. Their major customer is China, and China will not thank them for this and will be talking to Tehran, ensuring that this should not happen. I would say what is more dangerous, however, is the fact that we need to listen to the Shia diaspora, particularly in the Middle East, and we need to think about Iraq, where there are, of course, 2,500 American troops. We should listen to people like Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani, who's a very important voice for the Shia Muslim global population, who's in Iraq. He's originally from Iran. He's been talking about consequences, serious consequences that, that the Shia population, not only in Iran but also in Iraq and also elsewhere, should carry out if Iran is, now he's been not specific in terms of what type of retaliation should take place, but he's also supporting retaliation. And again, there is the Islamic resistance within groups, paramilitary groups, thousands of them in Iraq, who have also warned that they will respond if this happens. So I think we're looking at a more medium to long term game where Iran will go back to using terrorism. It would go back to using militias such as in Iraq, which
proxies.
Are yeah, exactly. Which is also from their point allows for some deniability, not direct action, which might sort of bring about a broader coalition, including bringing Europeans into
and
conflict.
And Edward, you say you wouldn't expect them to close the Strait of Hormuz. What about something like 40,000 American troops in various Gulf states at the moment? Would you expect them to bring those militias to bear in some way of attacks on Americans abroad?
I mean, I would be very surprised if there was an attack on sort of military bases such as CENTCOM and Qatar and Doha. However, I think, again, using indirect approach by using allies, militia in Iraq to try and target. And even further afield, look, we've just been listening to the Director General of MI5 in the UK saying that his service is struggling to keep up with Iranian intelligence plots in the UK, right? And that's also been replicated in Germany, where assassination plots, where the Iranian regime intelligence services are working with criminal groups to carry out murders, to plot sabotage, etc. And look, we've seen that playbook from Russia as well in terms of sabotage of aircraft, in terms of DHL aircraft, in terms of trying to target people who are selling weapons at private sector companies that are cooperating with the Ukrainian military. I expect Iran, to go that route whereby it's sort of semi-deniable, but everybody knows that the path leads back to Tehran.
Now, Sukhandar Kamani was saying to us there that, privately he would expect there'd be a broad welcome for these strikes in the Gulf states. The Iranian foreign minister is on his way to the Kremlin. He's on his way to meet Vladimir Putin. Putin has not been vocal in support of Iran here. And we know there was a conversation between himself and Donald Trump late last week, the end of last week. So did he have advance notice of what was about to take place? And will he pull back on any support for Iran?
I'd be very surprised if he had advance notice, because given the close contacts between Tehran and Moscow, I'd be very surprised if the United States took that risk. However, Putin has to, there's a very delicate balancing act that he has to carry off here, whereby he needs Iranian support, but he also, and that's very helpful to him in terms of technology, in terms of supplies from Iran that have helped the war in Ukraine and also help him to evade sanctions on occasion, both regimes coming together on that front. But also he has to sort of, keep Donald Trump kind of hoping and or keep Donald Trump's evident admiration for him at play as well. So I think he's doing a very, very delicate balancing act where he's not overtly in strong opposition, but the Russians would be saying very different messages to Tehran and Washington, almost completely contradictory, I would imagine. So playing a game there.
Look, I might be asking you to do a bit of crystal ball gazing here, but just projecting ahead over the next week, what do you envisage will happen?
More military strikes. So I think...
By the US?
Well, particularly by Israel. It remains to be seen what Iran's reaction can be, which is difficult to predict. But I think the Israelis are not finished yet. And they have obviously gained air superiority over Iran. That is a remarkable military tactical achievement. And I think they will continue to go after senior regime figures to try and sort of blunt that response, including from the Revolutionary Guards, this external kind of agency, Al-Quds force, that wages war around the world, including through proxies or through militia. So I think we'll see more strikes. I think, however, we should be very careful about estimating the effect of this latest round of bombings by the United States, because a lot of analysts have noted that uranium has been moved out of the Fordo site. They believe that as recently as a few days ago, there were sort of lines of trucks suspected of taking out uranium and moving it elsewhere. Iran has used a dispersal tactic since 2020 and 2021, not only with regards to uranium but also with regards to its scientists. So they have tried to accelerate the dissemination of capabilities, knowledge about how it's not kind of relying upon a handful of scientists, but trying to really build up the knowledge base.
And have we any way of ever independently knowing what was down there and what has been taken out by these bombs?
I mean, one way of potentially doing that is what the International Atomic Energy Agency are doing, which is trying to assess, if there is some release of uranium, if there was, if Fordo, for example, if that's where they concentrated in enormous amounts of uranium, you might expect some more release than perhaps has been the reported case today. So it's extraordinarily difficult, and we still don't have answers. A few months ago, the Iranians were building an even more intricate kind of series of subterranean headquarters for its nuclear program, sometimes referred near Natanz, sometimes referred to as a pickaxe mountain by the Americans. It's this, by their own admission, under the Biden administration, they were saying this would be really difficult to target, even with this kind of GBU-57 bunker busting munitions. So it is unclear to us that the Iranians may have seen this coming, should have seen this coming. They've obviously been penetrated very badly in terms of Israeli intelligence, but we shouldn't assume overwhelming success here in terms of these military strikes. It simply is too early.
Yeah. Dr. Edward Burke, really appreciate your time today. Dr. Edward Burke from UCD. Before we leave this section of the programme, let's hear from the chairman of the United States Joint Chiefs of Staff. Again, this is Air Force General Dan Kane, and he's been sharing some more details about Operation Midnight Hammer.
Iran's fighters did not fly, and it appears that Iran's surface-to-air missile systems did not see us. Throughout the mission, we retained the element of surprise. In total, U.S. forces employed approximately 75 precision-guided weapons during this operation. This included 14 30,000-pound GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrators, marking the first ever operational use of this weapon.
The Joint Chiefs there at the Pentagon News Conference. Coming up after the break, we'll have more on the fallout from the US airstrikes in Iran. And the chair of the Oberstown Children Detention Centre responds to claims of violent attacks and life-altering injuries to one staffer.